Having your child as a preschooler go off to school is emotional and scary. Regardless, if your child has a disability or without a disability, it's a charged kind of feeling for the first time. And so it's understandable when they learn, oh, I could have a smaller classroom, or, you know, these kinds of services provided in a specific place. I can see how that might be tempting. But after your child goes into school, they will continue to be segregated. It's so much more easy to continue inclusion than it is to go from segregated back to inclusion. And that's sort of the flip side. Inclusion sets the trajectory, but we also know from so many people working in systems that once they have been labeled and identified to be in the segregated placement, that continues on. And so I think it's really important that as families, we approach this vision that we have for our child in a long-range view.
Hi, friends. I'm Tim Villegas. This is Think Inclusive. Who you just heard was Jani Kozlowski, a passionate early childhood professional of over 30 years, author, speaker, technical assistance specialist, and consultant focused on supporting each and every child and family during the most critical period of development. Jani provides professional development and technical assistance for state leaders, educators, and other practitioners around topics such as early childhood disability services, supporting learning environments, infant-toddler development, collaborative partnerships, social-emotional development, quality improvement initiatives, and workforce professional development systems. She currently leads initiatives focused on early childhood disability services at the Frank Porter Graham Child Development Institute at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Jani is the author of Every Child Can Fly, an early childhood educator's guide to inclusion, and companion guide for families. Empowering Your Child to Fly, a family's guide to early childhood inclusion. Thanks so much for being here with us today. We appreciate each and every one of you for listening to or watching Think Inclusive, MCIE's podcast that brings you conversations with people doing the work of inclusion in the real world. And while you are here, make sure to hit the follow or subscribe button wherever you are so you can keep getting Think Inclusive in your feed. In this episode of Think Inclusive, Jani and I discuss the challenges and strategies related to advocating for inclusive education for young children with disabilities. Jani shares her experiences emphasizing the importance of early childhood inclusion and the long-term impact it has on a child's educational trajectory. She talks about her books, Every Child Can Fly and Empowering Your Child to Fly, and the adaptations she made to make the information accessible to families. Jani elaborates on strategies for parents to advocate for inclusion, the significance of building strong relationships between families and educators, and the importance of having a vision for a child's inclusive education. She also highlights useful resources like parental centers and legal assistance available through organizations such as CADRE, and concludes by sharing personal anecdotes and underscoring the value of cooperation and mutual support between families and educators to foster an inclusive learning environment. Before we get into my conversation with Jani, I want to tell you about our sponsor for this season, IXL. IXL is a fantastic all-in-one platform designed for K-12 education. It helps boost student achievement, empowers teachers, and tracks progress seamlessly. Imagine having a tool that simplifies what usually requires dozens of different resources. Well, that's IXL. As students practice, IXL adapts to their individual needs, ensuring they're both supported and challenged. Plus, each learner receives a personalized learning plan to effectively address any knowledge gaps. Interested in learning more? Visit IXL.com/inclusive. That's IXL.com/inclusive. All right, after a short break, we'll get into my conversation with Jani Kozlowski. Catch you on the other side. Janet Kozlowski, welcome to the Think Inclusive podcast.
Hi, Tim. Great to be with you.
It's so wonderful to see you again. What's going on? Like, what is going on in your world since you were last on Think Inclusive?
Well, and thanks for having me back. It's wonderful to be with you and to get to speak to your audience. I'm super excited. And gosh, I think when we last spoke, I had just published my first book, Every Child Can Fly. And I was, have really been thrilled by the response that I've gotten from the early childhood community. I developed a book study that I've delivered with groups in Montana and Oregon and Illinois. Been doing some keynotes. So it's kind of a scary time at first to put out kind of a personal book, since I had never shared about my own experiences in a public way about, you know, living with a disability and parenting a child with a disability. But the response was really incredible and super supportive. And it's just been really gratifying to be able to share what I've learned with other educators and leaders in childcare and Head Start and pre-K. And I've really been inspired by the teachers that I've met as well. So I met fellow inclusionists like us, and then also some teachers that are new to the concept of inclusion. And they were relieved to learn that they don't need some sort of magic pixie dust to be an educator for each and every child. So I learned a lot through the whole thing.
Yeah. The book is called, the book that you wrote, that we're going to talk about today, Empowering Your Child to Fly. I've got a copy of it right here.
That's the other thing that's happened since I last spoke to you is I adapted it for families.
Yeah. And you talk to a lot of families. So in the book, which is wonderful, you have a lot of quotes from families. So how many families did you end up talking with for the book?
I interviewed 15. Families. One family that you are familiar with is Hilda and Olivier Bernier.
Yes. So
that was really cool to be able to interview them, and also some families that work with the OSEP parent centers. So yeah, I knew that I didn't want it to just be my story, so I interviewed other families as well.
Yeah. What put you on the path to adapting the book? Was there a particular thing that happened, or was this always in your mind?
There was definitely a thing that happened.
Okay.
I wrote Every Child Can Fly for educators, and the point was really to try to demystify early intervention and early childhood special education and share the research base and the legal foundations around inclusion. Give them practical strategies, all for educators. I didn't let my husband read it when I was writing the manuscript because I wanted the stories to be true to my own personal parenting stories. So he didn't read it until it was published. And then he read it. And his reaction was how helpful it would have been to us when we were in the thick of it, parenting our own child. And so he said, you know, why don't you think about adapting this for families, because it would have been really helpful to us. So that's what I did. And and as I said, I interviewed 15 families and said their stories and their reflections are in the book, as well as some pictures too. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, the book is in full color, which is really nice. So if that's enticing to you, it's beautifully laid out, and there's like you said, a lot of quotes and a lot of stories from families, specifically about families, because you mentioned your husband mentioned that this would have been a good resource for a family to, as they're on their journey for inclusion. Why do you think it's important for families to, you know, embrace inclusion at the beginning of their journey?
And, you know, I've loved getting to know you, Tim, because you have the K-12 perspective on inclusion and, you know, your role in K-12. And that's not my world. I'm an early childhood person. And so, you know, my background is with Head Start and childcare, early intervention, early childhood special education. And so I'm really kind of focused in on that lens of inclusion in early childhood specifically. And I think it's so important for families because inclusion really, or early childhood inclusion, sets the trajectory for inclusion in elementary school and then middle school, high school, and life. And it's easier to include a three-year-old, I think, because mm-hmm. everything about school is new to them, you know, and everything about school is new to the family as well, if that's their first child. So there aren't established patterns. And so we can kind of get it right from the start. And I think that this is really true because not only for the child with a disability and their family and of starting out in an inclusive setting. And so that's the expectation as the child grows. That's just kind of what the family expects, what the child expects. Everyone's comfortable. But it's also so important for children without disabilities because they are learning, you know, and if you think about 3 and 4 year olds, they're learning about differences in general. That's the where they are developmentally. They're understanding differences in skin color, in cultural practices, and how our home life routines are different. All of the ways we differ from one another. And so at that age, young children are really open to the truth that we also differ from one another in the way we accomplish things in life. Some of us roll rather than walk or use assistive technology to communicate. Some of us need supports to calm our nervous system when we're around other people. And so in early childhood, children are learning all of those things. And so when children are segregated while their brains are making sense of all that, we're just doing a disservice not only to children with disabilities, but children without disabilities too, because they're not children without disabilities aren't learning a true picture of the world. So I love inclusion, but particularly in early childhood, it's so important because it gives children the full exposure to the range of what it means to be a human being.
Yeah. As you were talking, I'm thinking about some specific scenarios where you have a family who lives in a school district and the services that are provided for their child with a disability, in preschool, there's no option for an inclusive setting. So what is told to the family is your child will be cared for. Your child will have a small group in their classroom. You'll have highly trained staff and we'll take really good care of your child with a disability who is, in that pre-K range. And we're going to provide all the services that your child needs. And that family hears that and feels really good about the place that their child is going. And so if they feel like there's a different path, but it's just not available, that family feels really good about the decision to have their child go to this like segregated, self-contained classroom that has maybe 10 kids. And maybe that child makes progress, right? Because of there's a lot of different variables. Why should that family think that there's something better or to advocate for something better? Because I feel like that's where families are sometimes. They just don't know what they don't know, you know? What advice would you give to those families who are really at the beginning of this journey?
Yeah, and making a decision to advocate for inclusion for their child. I think it's such a good question. It's so easy to
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Understand how a family would feel that way, because having your child as a preschooler go off to school is emotional and scary. And, you know, there's all kinds of things that come up from that. Regardless, if your child has a disability or without a disability, it's a charged kind of feeling for the first time. And so it's understandable when they learn, oh, I could have a smaller classroom, or, you know, these kinds of services provided in a specific place. I can see how that might be tempting. But the thing is that after your child goes into school, they will continue to be segregated. It's so much more easy to continue inclusion than it is to go from segregated back to inclusion. And that's sort of like the flip side of inclusion sets the trajectory. But we also know from so many people working in systems that once they have been labeled and identified to be in the segregated placement, that kind of continues on and continues on. And so I think it's really important that, you know, that as families, we approach this vision that we have for our child in a long range view. And I don't think anyone with a 4-year-old starting out would want to see their child segregated. You know, we have dreams for our child, and it typically isn't to be in a segregated placement. So I think that's one way to think of it as well. I think the other thing is that special education is a service. It's not a place. And it really is about where can the child be most successful in the place where they would be if they didn't have a disability. No, and typically that's childcare or Head Start or pre-K and some other, you know, state-funded pre-K, for example. And it's just, what are the services that are necessary so that my child can be successful in that place where they would be if they didn't have a disability? So I can certainly understand how parents might have some anxiety about it. But I know for me, with my own son, it was really important to me that he be treated, you know, that he be in a place where he would be if he didn't have a disability.
Yeah.
We don't live in a segregated world. You know, we fortunately, we live in an inclusive world. There aren't separate grocery stores. There aren't separate restaurants for people with disabilities. So it's really unfair for children to have that kind of expectation and then get out into the world in an inclusive world. So
yeah,
it really does help right from the start.
It does. It does. Yeah, I've been reflecting on this. For inclusionists, for people like you and me, use the language of segregation, right? We use it because we know that it sends a message, right? School districts aren't calling their special education classrooms segregated classrooms.
It's self-contained, yes.
They're self-contained, or they're special education classes, mm-hmm. or something like that. We use it because we know that that is what is actually happening. And so I think for families, they're in a spot where they're receiving information that's messaged and framed in a way that is enticing or that makes them feel really good about this particular option or, you know, choice, as maybe some people would frame it. So, okay. But I think it's important for people, especially in this conversation, to really call it what it is. And that is an actual segregated placement. And like what you said, if you are segregated early, it really determines your trajectory. More often than not, way more often than not, if you are in a segregated placement in preschool, you will be in one in kindergarten, and so on and so on and so on. So, and then also too, I was just at Walmart, Jenny. So this is like, again, I'm sorry, I'm going on a tangent here, but so I was just at Walmart and I was picking up something and I'm on my way out and there was a sign, and the sign said, on Friday mornings between 8 and 10, there are sensory friendly hours, right? And I was thinking, now, wait a minute. We always say that there aren't like special education grocery stores or like stuff like that. And I really had to think about this. And so kind of where I landed was that having an inclusive world means that sometimes you are going to provide accommodations like sensory friendly theaters or sensory friendly shopping hours or sensory friendly kits at like amusement parks or whatever like that. But it's all a matter of providing options and choices for families and individuals who may want to use those opportunities. But in no way do we have said, okay, well, you're disabled, so therefore you have to go
to the disabled grocery store during this period. Yes. Yes.
Exactly. And I think that's the difference. And so I just wanted to process that with you because, someone may be listening and thinking about, like, well, wait a minute. They have these quote unquote special times or special places and stuff like that. And I don't think either of us are saying those are bad things. I just think that, when we are not actually providing choice, and saying, because of your disability, because of the characteristics of whatever it is that make you have to be in this particular spot to get quote unquote services. I think that's kind of the issue.
Yeah. I think that's a really good point.
Yes. Now for families who are, that want to advocate for inclusion, are there any strategies that you would recommend for, advocating for inclusive school placements?
Yes. Well, so that in early childhood, again, these are families just starting out. And I think one of the things that is going to be super important in early childhood is for families to understand the law, understand if they have an infant or a toddler, then they will be served by early intervention, and Part C has different goals and different eligibility requirements than Part B of IDEA and preschool is different. So really becoming armed with the knowledge about what their rights are, what their child is entitled to receive. For Part C, there are different eligibility requirements from state to state. And some of those policies are made at the state level. And as you said, inclusion is not consistent across our country. In fact, fewer than half of preschool age children receive services in an inclusive early childhood setting. And so I think for families, the first thing is really coming to understand what their rights are and what the laws are and what least restrictive environment looks like in early childhood. Because we don't have mandatory child care and Head Start and pre-K. We start with kindergarten in states. And so it's going to be varied. But That doesn't mean that least restrictive environment doesn't apply for preschoolers. It still applies. And so IDEA is very clear that when IEP teams make decisions about placement, they first need to consider the place the child would be if they didn't have a disability. And how can we design services and supports that are going to make that child successful there? So I think that's kind of the first thing. And then the second thing that I think is super important for families as they're advocating for inclusion is to connect with other families. Mm-hmm. You know, the Office of Special Education Programs has funded parent centers across the country. Every state's required to have them. And if families go to parentcenterhub.org, they can look up where their parent center is in their state, who to connect with. And so there's a way to connect with other families. Some of these programs have mentoring initiatives, and they're all run by people that either have a child currently in special ed or previously. And so it's run by families. And so I think that would be really important. And then I think in terms of advocacy, gosh, don't you think the IEP meeting, that first IEP meeting, is so critical? So understanding that IEP meetings are different from child to child, but by law, certain topics are required to be covered. And so if families can prepare for those meetings and think ahead of time how, what their child's strengths are, what their concerns are about their child's development or education, and what kind of services and supports they think would be most helpful. And the questions to ask, come ready to say, I need to know X, Y, or Z, or I really could use some resources about X, Y, or Z, or how have other families managed this? Because that meeting is where all of those kinds of decisions will be made and will come up. And I know for myself, I really wasn't prepared for that. And so that's why I really spend a lot of time in the book just thinking about all of the kind of information that will be discussed, the kinds of questions to ask, and the kinds of things that as family member to be ready to share. I don't know. What are your thoughts about the IEP meeting
I think the IEP meeting is really important. And I think you touch on it in the book about having a vision, right, for inclusion. Mm-hmm. And the IEP meetings that I were part of where the families were advocating for inclusion, that was one of the first things that they did. Even though I typically went to IEP meetings that the children were older, a vision statement or having some sort of, overall, like, this is where we're going, this is what we want for our child. That was really, really important. Because if the parents don't have a vision, often what is the default is what the team, like the school team, what their vision is, right? I think it's really important.
But does the school team see the disability? They don't see the full, the full range of who your child is. Oftentimes we focus on the disability itself. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we've talked about, some of the strategies that you'd recommend for parents, as they advocate. What about, how parents could work with educators and specialists to support their child when they're in school? Mm-hmm.
And I think this is another super important ingredient, if not the most important ingredient, are those relationships that we build between educators and teachers, or educators and families. And, the research really backs us up on this, because every time a child starts a new class, there's a need to have a new relationship. And what we have learned from early childhood research, you know, we have a lot of research in early childhood about suspension and expulsion, because you wouldn't think that there would be so much suspension and expulsion for preschoolers, but there really is. And Walter Gilliam from the Yale Child Study Center, I saw him speak one time, and he made such an impression on me. He said that he had never seen a case where a child was suspended or expelled when the family had a good relationship with the teacher. He'd never seen it. I mean, I know. And so that positive relationship is really going to make or break it.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
And it can't be easy. It's not easy, especially when you think about inclusion, because we also know that the biggest challenge to inclusion are the attitudes and beliefs that professionals hold, you know? And so it's a difficult thing to address, but I think it's also something that can really be worked on. And I try to give some strategies. I heard that from so many families when writing the book as well, of strategies they used to support that relationship. And, you know, I always joke that my strategy was simple. It was compliments, presents, and baked goods. Volunteering. Yeah, I tried to schmooze my way through many of the relationships, but that didn't always work. Can I tell you a quick story about this?
Of course, yes. The podcast, you can tell as many stories as you'd like.
My son Ricky was adopted at 17 months old. And so he was, at first 17 months, he was in an orphanage in Ukraine. And this was many years ago. He's 26 now. But so those first 17 months of his life, he really didn't have those kinds of experiences that he needed. The caregivers were really worried about having an epidemic or some kind of public or some health situation in the orphanage. And so they were very careful about keeping everything sanitary. And so I remember when we would go there, they had toys, but they were up on the high shelf. So the children really didn't have access to toys. And so when we first brought Ricky home, we noticed that, you know, infants explore the world through all their senses. And so because he didn't have the chance to put things in his mouth because they were trying to keep everything sanitary, he really wanted to explore the world that way. And at home, that wasn't such a big deal. You know, I mean, he could put toys in his mouth. I didn't have other children there that I needed to worry about passing on germs. When he got to preschool, it was an issue. And I came to school one day, and his teacher said, "Jenny, come over here. I want to show you something." And she took me over to a sink that was filled with soapy water and a bunch of toys. And she said, "These are the toys that Ricky has put in his mouth just since noon." And I was so embarrassed. I said, "I'm going to talk to him. We're going to have a piece three, but we're going to have a conversation about this." And I didn't know what to do. And I felt like, okay, this is where he gets expelled. because of this. And so I called up a friend of mine who worked in early intervention. And she said, well, Jenny, he just needs something that he can have with him all the time that he can put in his mouth, you know, when he has that need. And so she said, why don't you get some of those teether beads and make a necklace? And then that way he can put that in. I was like, brilliant idea. So we made the necklace. He went to school and I talked to his teacher. I was like, this is what he's wearing. And I thought, you know, what a brilliant parent I was, you know. When I picked him up from school that day, he wasn't wearing the necklace. And I asked his teacher, I was like, what happened? And she said, oh, that thing was nasty. And she handed the necklace back to me in a plastic bag. And I was just so kind of crestfallen. Felt like, how are we going to make this work? But the thing is, because we had had a relationship and because we did, you know, over time build this partnership, she knew Ricky's story. You know, she knew what we were up against. She knew the why that this, that he engaged in that behavior. She knew the vision that we shared a vision for him. And so we problem solved together and he started wearing a bandana to school. And so it was absorbent. I brought her a stack of bandanas that she could swap out through the day. But if it weren't for that relationship, I'm sure that I would have been looking for another placement. So,
right.
Yeah. But, you know, having that ability to problem solve together is so powerful. That relationship is super important.
Oh, wow. Thank you for sharing that. The relationship is really powerful. And cultivating that, it takes time.
Yeah.
Something else I've been thinking about is that, you know, just the actual challenges that a family would run into as they're advocating and seeking inclusive education for their child. So your story kind of, you know, you had a challenge that you worked through with an educator, and it's because you had a good relationship that you were able to move beyond that challenge. Are there any other kind of common challenges that families face when seeking inclusive education?
Well, I think the biggest challenge is, like you said, if self-contained classrooms are just kind of the way we do things around here, oh, your child has autism. We have an autism classroom, you know. We've got the solution. So to be able to have the strength as a parent to say, no, I don't want my child to go in the autism classroom. She's already in childcare. I want her to stay there and get services there. It's tricky. You know, that's a huge challenge. And I'm not going to pretend like that's something that's easy. But I do think that the resources that we have in the parent centers, in the other OSEP-funded centers like CADRE, you know, where families can get some legal assistance to help them with that process, you know, that having a team of people that can join you in the IEP meeting so that when it comes time to talk about placement, you have somebody else there to help you make that argument. And I'm not going to say it's always going to be successful. You know, we saw Forget-Me-Not and this story that Olivier and Hilda shared. And I do think that happens a lot. But I also think that when we're able to kind of share our vision for our child with an IEP team, and the fact that we have a dream of, you know, the big picture for our child that is living in an inclusive world, I think that there are ways for it to be figured out. And we've seen that in community after community where families and educators and, you know, administrators have come together to figure out, well, you know, let's form some partnerships between a childcare program or between a Head Start program so that an inclusive option can be available.
You mentioned two resources with us talking. Could you talk a little bit about CADRE? Because I know I've heard about it, but I'm not sure if everyone listening knows about it.
Yeah, so maybe we can put the link in the show notes. Because I'm not an expert, but they are a resource to help families with dispute resolution, for example, and if they have legal kinds of questions. So it's a place to go for that kind of information.
Okay, yeah, so we'll put that in the show notes. And then the second is the documentary.
Forget me not.
It's just there.
Inclusion in classrooms.
So forget me not. And but we do have, and I'll put this in our show notes, we did a webinar, a live webinar with Olivier, where we showed parts of the film, and we had a Q&A, and also Olivier was a guest in our Think Inclusive universe. So we'll put that link in the show notes. I know that you screened Forget Me Not. Was it for the Inclusion Institute or was it for something else?
It was. Yes, we had a community showing. It was great. And then Olivier joined us and we had a Q&A. It was really powerful.
Yes. So we'll make sure to put that resource in our show notes. And definitely, if you haven't seen it, watch the documentary. It's fantastic. So any other ideas for families to overcome challenges?
I think this whole notion of keeping the long view in mind, that where you are now is just one point in your family's journey, one point in your child's life. Sure. I kept a journal when Ricky was growing up of kind of the funny things that he said or did in those early years of his life. Is one of my cherished possessions. I never would have been able to remember all that stuff if I hadn't written it down. And I remember at the time thinking that I'm only going to write the funny things or the happy things. You know, I put pictures in there of all of us smiling, the positive memories, because I was worried that as an adult, he would stumble upon it and read about how hard it really was at times. So I only put the happy times in there. And the funny thing is that when I look back at that and I read that journal, I still remember the tough memories. And my son does too, because he was there. He lived it. And in many ways, those memories are, the most powerful to me, because it shows me how far we've come, how far Ricky has come, how far I've come as a mom, how we've both been able to overcome adversity, and how he's been able to thrive in spite of some of that adversity. And, with the benefit of years, I'm not in that place where the families that I write to in the book are, but with those years behind me, I'm able to see that that the hard times were important times for both of us, and that parenting itself is about embracing the fact that our children are individuals and we have everything and nothing at all to do with it, with how they grow and develop.
Oh my goodness, it's so true. Yeah.
Isn't it? They always talk about how your child turned out like it's a pumpkin pie that you took out of the oven. And we never do turn out, we're constantly growing and evolving and changing through our entire lives. And, in hindsight, it's easy to understand that. But it really was, it's been a powerful lesson for me because I spent so much time worrying about how I was doing as a mom. Was I good enough? Was I giving Ricky everything that he needed? Was I making the right choices? But looking back, I think I would have given myself a little more grace if I had to do it over again. Because honestly, it is just a point in the journey, and we make the best decisions we can, you know, as we go along.
I think, you know, we talked a little bit before about parents having a vision for their children, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I think that is, it is important. It's a strategy. And as we're talking just now, I think that, you know, as parents, we can have a vision for, you know, that our children are happy, that they're included, that they feel like they have a sense of belonging. But sometimes the vision that we have the outcome, right, okay, isn't always what actually happens or even what's best, right, for our children. So I think that it's kind of a strange thing to think about, I guess, but, you know, I guess it's important to have one. It's important to have one, but you just don't know.
We don't know. You don't know. It's kind of a paradox, you know?
Yeah.
You do want to have a vision so that you have something that you're working toward and something very broad, you know? And I think part of the vision in my mind is about identifying what the child's strengths and preferences are and finding a way to make those strengths as strong as they can be, to figuring out a way that as an adult, the child is going to be able to do the kinds of things that bring them joy, you know, be in places that bring them joy, be around people that bring them joy. And that's really true for all children, you know, regardless, all children face challenges, and we have to do that for kids as adults because children don't have, you know, self-reflection. There's no self-reflection in a two-year-old. But when we're able to put into words what we believe our child's strengths are and give some affirmation and encouragement around those strengths and preferences, that's how you end up with a healthy self-image. You know, and it's especially important for children with disabilities. Have you read the book Born Extraordinary by Meg Zucker?
No.
No, I'll have to put that in the show notes too.
Yeah, another resource. Yeah, great.
Yeah, so I just found it really powerful. And one of the things she wrote is, so she has a disability and her children have disabilities. And she wrote, "When the world takes one glance at you and reminds you of everything you aren't, you need to rely on constant reinforcement at home to remind you of everything you are." And so I think that's part of what the vision is, right? Is being really clear about the fact that we all come with strengths and we all come with challenges, and to presume competence, you know, to respect your child's autonomy, to avoid making assumptions, but really to approach each new situation with this mindset that your child is capable, and even though they might not be able to master the skill right away, they should be given a chance to try. And when you start out thinking your child is capable of everything, they might surprise you, you know, because we really don't know. And it also helps us to not jump in to help, you know, so quickly.
Yeah.
Because we, you know, starting from the place, well, maybe they can do this themselves, you know, eventually.
Exactly. Hard to do in practice, but yes.
Yeah.
Well, as you know, Jenny, a lot of educators listen to this podcast. So, and a lot of K-12 educators, although we do have, you know, people on kind of both ends of the spectrum, pre-K and then higher ed. Any final thoughts that you'd like our audience to leave our conversation with?
Well, I feel like it's been fun to talk about the parent-educator relationship, because that was so helpful to me as a parent. And I found when educators viewed me as a partner, you know, not necessarily, oh, she's the parent, the child's first teacher. You know, that's really nice, but I just wanted to be a partner. It's like, be my partner, help me figure this out. Let's figure this out together. I might be the expert on things going on at home. You're the expert on things going on at school. You know, let's figure this out together and share what we're learning. Now that, guess what? Michael learned how to do this new thing, and that new thing might have been the first time that happened at home, or maybe the first time happened at school. But when you're a partnership, you get to celebrate that new thing together. Because those little celebrations are what makes being an educator so worthwhile. And I think, you know, we as educators, we are in a very important position of supporting families, you know, of being the one to sort of reach out and offer that kind of partnership. We're also in a position of being able to nurture those strengths and preferences and interests. And we're also in a position of helping the child connect socially, something that it's harder for families to do, you know? So I remember as a teacher, when I noticed that a couple of kids in my class had the same preference, you know, they were both really into something that was kind of obscure. And I shared that with the family, both families, and kind of made a little friendship match that way. Now, the families were so grateful to that. And I think for children with disabilities, if they have a harder time making friends, that can be a huge role that we can play as educators too. So, yeah, I hope that that they'll share this book with families and let me know what they think.
Yeah. And please. So where can people find your book?
So there's links to the books at everychildcanfly.com. They're both published by Griffin House. The Empowering Your Child to Fly is going to be available in audiobook. So that's a new thing.
Right. And did you record the audiobook?
I did not. You know, dang lady recorded it.
We're feeling okay, good.
Yes, I think she's like my soul sister. I've never met her, but she's perfect just like me. And
that's great. That's great.
Like Jameson, the exact same way I would have made them. So
that's amazing.
That should be out soon. So
yeah, so the book is called Empowering Your Child to Fly, A Family's Guide to Early Childhood Inclusion. And for those of you watching on YouTube, I'm holding the and for those who can't see it, I'm actually holding the book up. It's got wonderful artwork. Definitely get one for your library and use it as a resource. Anything else you want to promote while you're here, Janie?
Thank you so much for helping me share. If you go to everychildcanfly.com, I do have a newsletter. I always laughed at your weekly-ish newsletter. Mine is like every other monthly-ish. Very frequent that I put them out, but you can sign up if you're interested in staying in touch that way.
Okay, great. Hey, Al, and Jay, the weekly-ish is coming back. By the time this airs, this is published, the weekly-ish should be in full publication mode again. So we're starting back in February. Very excited about that. Yes. All right. So, Janie, before I let you go, it's time for a mystery question. Are you ready?
Yes.
That means I should have had my cards ready to go, but they are here, and I forgot to. Okay, here we go. So here's my stack of cards. The mystery question is, what is the nicest thing? Actually, you know what? I did this one already. I forgot to put it away. Okay. What words do you always struggle to spell correctly? So I can put that on the camera. What words Do you always struggle to spell correctly? And I definitely have words that I cannot spell because I'm not a great speller.
Well, so I was a really great speller in school. And in fact, I was runner up in the spelling bee. And I remember the word that I got wrong.
Wow. What was it?
It was pewter. You know, the metal pewter.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I had no idea what that even was. But I did not spell that correctly. And I remember that because my mom was so proud of me for doing so well, even though I didn't win. She gave me a little figurine of a pewter, made out of pewter, of a little girl reading a book.
That is a sweet memory.
Yeah.
Well, the word that I always have to look up is restaurant.
Awful.
Restaurant. I can never, it's just like a jumble in my mind. Like when I say the word, it's just this kind of blurry restaurant. And then also beautiful for some reason is like really hard for me, even though like I know like generally how it's spelled, it's just so hard. So there's like a few words like that. Those are the two ones that I don't. And so fortunately for me, I have tools like spell check, and then I also subscribe to Grammarly. So I just write words without any sort of like I know that those supports are there for me. So
it's wonderful. I mean, we don't have to worry about any worry. Just, yeah. I struggle with the ones that have like two M's or two T's. You never know. Is this one that only has one M or does this have two T's?
Exactly.
Favorite, definitely.
Oh, I love spell check. Oh my gosh. Yes, yes, yes. And now with AI too.
Right, sometimes you spell it so bad that spell check's like, I have no idea.
You don't know what you're trying to say. That's great. No. And I've been utilizing AI a lot more too. So I will ask. So we have like a number of AI tools that I use. I use ChatGPT sometimes, and then we have Copilot because we're a Microsoft organization, so we have a lot of Microsoft tools, and Copilot's one of them. And I will often be like, okay, make this sound, a little bit more creative, or can you suggest a word instead of this word, or, can you check the grammar? And then, so there's a lot of things that I use AI for to help me just be a better writer. So
it's cool. And Tim, that is an example with universal design.
Mm-hmm.
And it's assistive technology that we all benefit from. It's another example of how ability is just a continuum, and we're all really good at some things and really need support in other things. And one day our world will be kind of all of the equivalent of spell check, that everyone has the tools that they need, and we're not
right
categorizing people based on those needs. We're just figuring out ways to support each other. So now, that's my vision.
That's a beautiful vision. Jani Kozlowski, thank you so much for being on the Think Inclusive podcast. This is so much fun.
It was fun. It's great to be with you again, Tim. Thank you so much for having me on and helping me share about the book. Appreciate it.
That's all the time we have for this episode of Think Inclusive. Now, let's roll the credits. Think Inclusive is brought to you by me, Tim Viegas. I handle the writing, editing, design, mixing, and mastering. This podcast is a proud production of the Maryland Coalition for Inclusive Education. Our original music is by Miles Kredich, with additional tunes by Melody. A big shout out to our sponsor, IXL. Check them out at IXL.com/inclusive. We truly appreciate each and every one of you who tunes in. We'd love to hear how you're using these episodes. Are they part of your teaching toolkit? are you sharing them with school administrators? Drop me a line at tviegas@mcie.org and let me know. And hey, if you're still with us this far into the episode, it probably means that you love Think Inclusive and the work MCIE is doing. So can I ask a small favor? Help us keep the momentum going by donating at our website, mcie.org. Just click the button at the top of the site and chip in $5, $10, $20. It would mean the world to us and the children in the schools and districts we partner with. Thanks for your time and attention. And remember, inclusion always works. From MCIE.